Hey, greetings, everyone. I am Dr. Tommy Watson, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Stories Podcast, where we share the grit and glory behind the stories of amazing people like you who have bounced back from adversity and failure to want to live the best lives on purpose. Today's show is being sponsored by Million Dollar Business Pathway, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and sell. If you want to learn how to tell and say your story, go to tawatson.com under the programs and product page. Click on Million Dollar Business Pathway to get yourself started. So, folks, are you guys ready for another amazing show today? Joining me, I have the one and only Dr. Lance Thompson. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you on. And Doc, for the folks who may not necessarily know who you are, can you just briefly introduce yourself and mention that amazing book you have out there as well?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Lance Thompson. I am currently the Executive Vice President, CFO, and Chief Strategy Officer for Clark Atlanta University. Yes. I've had a very long corporate career, about 35 years in corporate America prior to coming to higher ed. I've always been a writer. So the most recent book that I've written and released recently was called Black Wounds, The Pain, yes. Scars, and Triumphs of Black America.
Yes, yes. So powerful. And Doc, if people want to get a hold of you or follow you, what's the best way to connect with you?
To get a hold of myself?
Yes, sir.
Lance Thompson at AOL.com.
Okay.
So just all one word, LANZETHOMPSON at AOL.com.
Made it very easy for you. So reach out to him, follow him, get that book as well. So Dr. Thompson, you know, we bring amazing people like yourself onto our podcast. They have you kind of talk us through one of the most difficult times. I mean, you've had a stellar career in corporate America, and people will see from a distance and say, hey, he's at the university now. There's no way, you know, he's went to corporate America. So there's no way he went through this life having challenges. But I know that you had, I mean, being one of the probably few African-Americans in your corporate environment, you probably had to face challenges there. So talk to us about one of the most difficult times. It can be the person or profession that you faced in life.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And I was kind of thinking about that, you know, from a career standpoint versus a personal standpoint. So from a career standpoint, you know, as you know, I would think for most Black professionals who certainly enter the corporate world, there's this whole, I don't know, invisible web or energy that you don't know. And some of it, you don't know what you don't know, but you believe that you're going into an environment that's going to evaluate you, recognize you, reward you based on your merit. And based on your determination, based on your hard work, based on your accomplishments.
Yeah.
And you, somewhere along the way, when you get into this, you know, it may not be the first year or second year, but somewhere along the line, you realize that that doesn't seem to be the case, that, sure. that there seems to be a different set of rules that apply to your success and progress versus your peers that you're operating with. Sure. So I think, you know, the hardest part was to realize that that what you did is as hard as you worked and as motivated and dedicated as you was to it, that there was a sense of will it be enough?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you keep trying to figure out what does being enough mean?
Sure.
Because it, you know, it's different and the rules keep changing. So what was enough last year is not enough this year. Right. And so it's a sliding scale. There's never any a defined a firm metric, if you will. And then you think that, you know, if I can just keep learning how to be better and keep learning how to do more, keep learning how to understand the game, you know, like say, well, you know, you got to understand the game. You have to know how to network and socialize. So you keep thinking if I can also add those soft skills to my repertoire, then these are going to be the things that are going to be the difference maker. And then if I keep adding to my credentials, so continuing sure. to go on to school, continue to take professional development classes, continue to volunteer for assignments or task force. So you're always thinking, just one more thing, if I can do it, that'll be the thing that kind of sets me in into the club that says, yes, you know, he's someone who's worthy of what he's trying to attain. And so that's what you, you know, you spend a lot of your corporate career doing that. And then somewhere along the line, it's a brick wall. It just becomes so clear that it's not you. Yeah. So you have to go from this transition, mental transition of thinking that it's you, that you can fix you, to realizing it's the system.
Yes.
It's these barriers that are put, you know, it's very systematic and it's very well integrated based on who gets recruited, who gets assignments, who gets certain promotions, who gets certain opportunities to be seen by senior executives. You realize all these things that you don't even know are going on that are the difference maker are not in your control.
Sure.
And then once the light goes off, you realize, wow.
Yeah.
But then the challenge becomes, now that I know that, what do I do about it? Do I just quit? Do I just take my ball and go home? Do I just be demotivated and just give my minimum effort because I still have a sense of my own pride, my own sense of excellence, and my own sense of accomplishment, what I, you know, put in a hard day's work and feel good about it just for the sake of my own sense of integrity. So now that you know this, how do you now incorporate that into all the things that you believe and who you are and what you've been working for your whole life?
Absolutely. And, you know, Doc, as you think back on your stellar corporate career, was there a specific incident that you can tell us about where it kind of shook your whole perspective of it wasn't just based upon you, but you, when you faced that first element of and slapped in the face with discrimination, was there a specific incident you can tell us about?
Yeah, you know, without naming any companies or people or anything, you know, it was probably a number of examples I can probably give, but just some of the ones that I think were most impactful was, you know, I was doing a presentation, mm-hmm. and I had prepared the presentation, spent a lot of time on, you know, the facts and numbers, and it was financial and strategic in nature. So it was really taking a hard look at where we were financially, where we were trying to go based on strategic objectives, and then a pro forma as to if we were successful, then here's what the financial outcome would look like and the value that would be added. So it was very detailed, financial, analytical, strategic, and so forth, all those combined in one. And so I made the presentation, and it was to a senior, you know, much senior level of management. All of them, I'd say most of them, if not all of them, were white, male, Caucasian, mm-hmm. Which I had interacted with that dynamic my whole career. That's just what it was. That's just the lay of the land. Many times you walk in the room and you're the only black manager or vice president or executive. So that wasn't anything unusual, but that was just the audience. So in terms of providing that information and making this presentation, there were a few that were engaged, that were, you know, kind of shaking their head, asking some good probing questions. And there were a number who were just kind of sitting back and like they were tolerating this presentation, if you will. And so that certainly caught my attention. You know, you can feel the energy in the room when you're interacting with folks, and that kind of caught my attention. So I had to still stay on point, stay focused on the presentation. Afterwards, it was decided, or the feedback was, you know, well that was good. Thanks for sharing that with us, and we'll let you know what we think about it. So there wasn't much. You know, discussion or absorbing it, you know, hey, I agree with you or I disagree with you. It was just more kind of, you know, kind of thank you. And, you know, box checked off. Now you can leave.
Right.
So that stuck with me because I, you know, this was a very important initiative for our company strategically at that time. And the feedback as I was leaving the meeting and walking out with my immediate manager, the feedback was around, you know, not all the font sizes in your presentation were all the same.
Really?
Really? Okay. What about the pro forma? What about the value add and the return on investment that I just, No, you know, I think you used a good number of charts, I mean, of tables, but we probably could have used a few more graphical charts. So this was the feedback on a very important strategic initiative. And only later did I realize that the person who was giving me this feedback, and this was a finance operation, senior finance position, this person didn't even have an MBA.
Wow.
So it made sense to me that they couldn't really critique things from a strategic, financial, analytical perspective. They were looking at commas and periods and font sizes. So that was the feedback I got, which was certainly not helpful at all,
yeah.
You know, and certainly not what I would expect one of my, or that I've seen, you know, some of my peers get back, you know, in some of these presentations that I've sat in on. So that was the feedback I got. There was not much of a decision on the initiative. And so months went by, 9 to 12 months went by. I come to find out from another source that a lot of those themes that I had indicated and promoted in that presentation were actually adopted and they were actually in use. And there was a whole other manager who was getting the credit for having implemented those, who sat in on my presentation.
Wow, wow.
So, you know, that just said to me that the disrespect of it, the sense of feeling like your work can be hijacked at any time, no one owes you any explanation or any credit or consideration for it. But also, you know, the recognition that comes with having made successful contributions that go along towards your next continued upward progress and mobility and compensation. So those are all the things that get stripped from you or you lose the opportunity on that others don't really see or care.
Yeah.
The damage that has just been done to you. So we're talking about wounds. Those are some of the wounds.
Wow.
Of not getting what you think you deserve, not getting the recognition, not feeling like you were acknowledged. You're the invisible man in the room, even when you're the one doing the presentation.
Right.
And that you're answering and reporting to people who have, you know, certainly much less credentials and experience than you have, but you have to sit there, you know, as a good team player and listen to the feedback and take it into account and try to figure out how to make some sense of it, even though it may not make complete sense to you.
Yes. You know, and Dr. Thompson, I really appreciate you sharing that because right now we're in the midst of seeing one of our Black females who's highly educated, very talented young lady, applying for the highest court in the land, the Supreme Court. And we're seeing some of the things that is happening to her in terms of how she's being judged compared to some of her previous peers who were in the same position as well. It's absolutely astonishing. So for those folks out there, Doc, who may not necessarily know or get this, talk to us about the feelings that you have to endure when you know you still have to show up as an African-American every day, knowing that the goalpost is being moved. Talk to us about some of the real feelings and emotions that kind of come with when you have to deal with that.
Yeah, so you have to, and a lot of this goes back to my upbringing as a child, you know, in Boston and in the inner city. Mm. And it's funny, you know, and we were very poor, as most people who were in housing projects were.
Sure.
But I tell people all the time, we were poor, but I was the last one to get the memo. Because I didn't know we were poor. We didn't act like we were poor. We didn't have a poor mentality.
Right.
So we were very competitive. We had this sense of can-do attitude that we were going to succeed. And whether it was, you know, most of it was on the sports arena, football, baseball. You know, we even played hockey in Boston, if you believe that. But it was a sense of can-do attitude, and we were going to compete for everything. And you didn't make excuses because everyone came from the same background. So there was no sob story. There was no sympathy that you were going to get from the next guy because his story was just as bad as your story, his situation. So you learned to just have to deal with the cards that you were dealt and play them to the best of your ability. So that foundation helped me in those situations in corporate America where I wasn't, even though I understood and I could feel and was affected by the you know, by the disparity and by the slight and by the not getting the recognition and the opportunities from that recognition that I felt I, you know, certainly deserved. You put your game face on. You didn't, you know, we always had a thing, never let them see you sweat. Never let them see that they got to you. And so, you know, you put your game face on, you come back even harder the next day. You know, some cases, and I had to counsel and mentor people over the years who had kind of a, you know, certainly different upbringing, different value system. And they might go through a situation and they would, the next day, they would just say, I'm not doing nothing. I'm coming in and I'm putting my feet up and I'm not doing anything. And I had to counsel them from that perspective to not take it that way. I came in and I did more. I came in and I wanted to work harder. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe it's the gerbil on the wheel kind of mentality. You're just working harder to stay in the same place. But there's a thing that I relied on. And that's my own personal integrity, the respect that my mother and my father, and my parents put into me. That sometimes you do things for other people, but a lot of times you do things for yourself. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do, and because it's the best of your ability.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't let anyone bring down the level of expectations or capabilities that you're able to perform at. Then they really will have beaten you, because you now have become your own worst detractor, because you're falling into a behavior pattern of not putting your best foot forward, even when you know you're capable of it.
Absolutely. Very, very, very well said. You know, and you were in corporate America for 30 plus years. Did you have any particular mentors? And if you did have a mentor who was probably most profound, what advice did that person give you to kind of help you endure some of the challenges you were going to be facing as a Black male in corporate America?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had several mentors over my career. And that's what I tell people also, that, you know, mentors, you know, aren't meant to be static. Sometimes based on where you are in your career and what you need in your career, you find a mentor who helps you with that. And then you may move on to someone else, you know, or someone who has a different experience. Mm-hmm. So the mentors I've had over my careers were the right person for that time. And very early on in my career, you know, when I moved to upstate New York from Boston, that's when I first left Boston. I was working with Philip Morris, and I was working under their Kraft food division. And I was the first Black manager hired into this division. Wow. And my general manager, who was from Boston, he grew up and we knew each other's neighborhoods, you know, and we never went into each other's neighborhoods. That's how separated, you know, and he was a middle-aged white man. And we knew each other's neighborhoods and we knew what those neighborhoods represented. And we knew that you don't go into those neighborhoods. So here we find ourselves outside of Boston in upstate New York, working for the same company, working for a common cause. And mm-hmm. he just approached me and started asking questions about mainly about Boston, about race and about racism and about things that I had to, you know, just my experiences and how did I handle it? And so what we were talking about was life. Mm-hmm. Before we even got into the business, you know, mm-hmm. him helping me understand the business or certainly, you know, being successful in the business, he just wanted to get to know me as a person. So, and that meant so much to me because he saw me. He didn't pretend that we're all the same color. He yes. didn't pretend that racism didn't exist, because he knew it firsthand from coming up in the neighborhoods in Boston. And he knew that I knew it already from my neighborhoods. So we just had an honest, frank conversation about what those days were like, how that made me feel, how did I handle it. And he was just, he was the first person who made me feel like I'm proud of what you had to, I acknowledge what you had to go through, and I'm proud mm-hmm. of you being able to survive and thrive from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just took it for granted. This is just the way the world was, and you just have to do what you have to do. But he acknowledged that, no, that there are things that aren't fair and aren't right. And the fact that you were able to do that, that really shows a lot of your, you know, perseverance and your tenacity. And the fact that he acknowledged that really made me hone into that yes, what I've taken for granted. And I think a lot of, you know, probably a lot of Black professionals and probably a lot of Blacks in general, we don't give ourselves enough credit for how tough that we really are.
Yes.
And how much that we've had to go through and endure and that we're succeeding at and that we're winning at. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, in my book title, I also talk about not just the pains and scars of Black America, but I talk about the triumphs.
Absolutely.
Because in spite of what we had to go through, and have been through for this 400 years, look at what we've accomplished. Look at all that we have still done. Yes. And so until he was the first person to kind of open my eyes to that. Mm-hmm. And then we got into a business relationship where, because we now had a personal relationship, the business part of it became so much easier to now have a productive relationship where he could give me some honest feedback. And I knew it was coming from a place, constructive place of him wanting me to be better and not me suspecting or being suspicious that it's coming from a place of, you know, him just trying to hold me down or tear me down.
Yeah, that is phenomenal. I really appreciate you sharing that. And kudos to this young man for reaching out and really connecting with you and seeing you as a human being and then establishing that relationship with you as well. So, you know, as you look back on your corporate career, on your darkest day, what kept you fighting? What kept you saying, hey, you know what, you're not gonna run me off. I'm here to stay. What was it that kept you going in your darkest day?
Well, I tell you this, and again, going back to my childhood, it was knowing that I was not going to disappoint my mother. Because even as a child, and funny, because everyone thinks these stories are unique to them, but I've met so many, Black men who've come from that inner city environment, and they have a similar story about their own mothers. Yeah. And that was, you know, they all have a story where you got into a scuffle back then. I call it a scuffle because it wasn't like today where you brought out a knife or a gun. It was just an honest hand-to-hand fight.
Yeah.
And you get into a scuffle and you come home and you got bruises on you and you've got some tears in your eyes and your mother grabs you and says, what happened to you? And you said, I had a fight with so-and-so. And she says, you know, why did you let him get the best of you?
Uh-huh.
You know, and well, he's you know, 2 years older than me. He's 2 inches taller than me. Uh-huh. I don't want to hear it. She grabs you by the collar and she takes you right back down there and tells you to go back in there and keep fighting.
Yes.
So even though he's still 2 years older, he's still 2 inches taller from 20 minutes ago when he first beat me up. You got to go back in there, but now you're fighting for someone other. Now you're fighting not to disappoint you. Disappoint mother.
Yeah.
And even though you're not going to all of a sudden be able to beat him this time around, you're able to bring out more of your fight, your energy, your determination, because you got her looking over your shoulder. Yes. and you're saying, I'm going to give it everything I have. And, yes. And if he beats me again, he beats me again. But this time I know that it was I left everything out there on the ground. So I take that back to corporate America, and it's that same thing. You know, I'm not going to let my mother know that these guys ran me off. I'm not going to let her know that they hurt my feelings to the point where I decided to take a sick day the next day and had to go get some comfort food. You know, she's the one who's going to grab me by the collar and say, "You get back in there."
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times her words were the words that you know were the ones that grabbed me by the collar. And yes. Put me back in there for the next meeting, or made me show up the next day for the next assignment.
Yes. I love it. I had one of those experiences with my mother and father as well, though. So we all have those experiences. Absolutely. So as you look back on your journey, how would you say that whole corporate experience and some of those trials and tribulations of not being treated fairly kind of shaped you as a person today?
Yeah, I think, you know, it made me more empathetic towards mm-hmm. others. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first came into my corporate career, it was really focused on me. Yeah. It was, you know, I want to grow my career. I want to reach the heights that I can reach in this company or the next company. I want to be compensated to the fullest, you know, for quality of life and for my own, you know, ambitions and desires. And so it was all focused on me. And as I went through my career and as I started realizing that these things were happening to me even at my level, and they certainly were happening to younger employees coming in, you know, younger Blacks just starting their career, it made me more empathetic towards trying to say, you know, what can I do to try and ease the road that they may have to travel. Sure. or at least feel some sense of obligation that I want to leave this place better off and with some barriers that are lower than when I came in. So you start focusing on maybe the bigger picture of the community versus the individual.
Yeah, that's great. And that's a great perspective to have as well. So, you know, Doc, we're coming off of 2 years here where people, some of our listening audience out there, they've lost finances, they lost jobs, they lost material possessions, they've even lost loved ones and even lost hope in some situations. What words of advice can you tell those folks out there who are banging their heads, hoping that tomorrow gets better? What can you tell those folks that help them hang in there a little bit longer?
Yeah, you know, all of us go through things, you know, no matter where we are in our life, there's those tribulations that we go through. And I can only share from my own personal experience, you know, so roughly 2 years ago, right at the start of the pandemic, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Wow. Wow.
And after you got off the, after you got over the shock of hearing those words, then I, true to life, you know, my mother, you know, roll up your sleeves and say, okay, you know, what do we need to do to fight? Yeah. But what I realized and what I tell the, well, I tell the audience, you know, per your question is, you know, I had to realize that, you know, all the times that I thought that I was fighting with my own skills, abilities, talent, motivations, I realized that I had a much stronger ally and spiritual faith and spiritual strength that had been with me all these years. And I had not fully acknowledged it or fully brought it to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And so when I got my diagnosis, I really leaned into that and realized that God had been with me all these years and all these steps that I've taken, and he's with me today. Yes. And so whatever happens on this journey of this diagnosis, it's going to be his will, his timing, his planning, his purpose. But I'm going to just celebrate knowing that I'm a child of his, that he's been with me. And, you know, I certainly want more days and steps in my life. But if I don't have them, I will be so grateful and thankful for the days and steps that he's already given me.
Absolutely.
And I just leaned into that and just be so appreciative of what I do have. Because sometimes you can always focus, and we focus on what we don't have or what we didn't get, and you kind of miss the things, the blessings and the favors that you do have. Yes. So I just started leaning into that, and just, you know, from a spiritual side, just really starting my day, you know, I call it my walk with God. You know, I just get up and I walk with him, and I thank him for the first breath of the day and the first steps that I take of the day. I want them to know that they are with him and they are dedicated to him. And that I ask him that he will continue to walk with me for the rest of the days, rest of the steps for the rest of that day. And I can't say that, you know, I'm asking for any specific thing, just that his the knowledge of him being in my life and the knowledge of him knowing that I know him and I love him and I accept him. Mm-hmm. And his blessings and favors will come as they come. That's right. And that gives me a sense of peace.
Yes.
So the things that I can't control, I've let go of those things. And the things that I can control, which is to know him and to honor him and to love him as much as I can, I do that. I focus on that. And then that turns into opportunities or things that I didn't expect to happen throughout the day, or blessings that I didn't even, you know, ask for. But I think first being centered with that sense of spiritual knowledge and love and grounding.
That is great advice. Folks out there, hope you've been very, very inspired by Dr. Lyons Thompson's story here as well. Great advice. Hey, Dr. Thompson, we've talked about some tough stuff. You ready to have a little fun here?
Yes.
All right. So this part of our podcast is called our Rapid Fire Purpose Questions. I'm going to ask you a number of questions about purpose. I want you to give me and the audience your most concise answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Doc, what gives your life meaning?
My family.
Okay. What one word best describes you?
Tenacious.
Okay, good one. What problem do you want to solve in our world?
Equality.
Okay, good. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid?
Play baseball and eat cheeseburgers.
That's a good ones to have, right? What do you wish you had more time to do?
Spend time with my family, my sons, you know, just everyday stuff. Nothing special, but just everyday stuff.
Absolutely. What did your 15-year-old self imagine you'd be doing right now?
Playing professional baseball was my dream, but then going on to write movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's awesome. I love it. I love it. Who inspires you the most?
You know, I have to go back to over the course of my life, I would say probably Malcolm X.
Okay. That's awesome. Great pick there. What do you want your grandchildren to say about you someday?
That he continued to put one foot in front of the other, kept moving forward, and just chipped away at the challenges in this world to hopefully make a path a little bit easier and a little bit brighter for their steps coming after me.
Absolutely. If you became president today, Dr. Thompson, what law would you pass first?
Well, so voting rights would be one. Criminal justice reform would be another. Equal pay would be another. Equal opportunity would be another. You know, and not just the, you know, I know we got a lot of DE&I, diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives, but not from the public relations standpoint, where you just check off boxes and you give the illusion of progress, but real meaningful opportunities for people who I know are very capable and qualified. I mean, I was one of those people who came up and I saw doors closed or bars moved that made it too high to reach. And I know so many people got frustrated and disenchanted and they leave. Yes. So just to make sure everyone feels like they've included and they've got opportunity.
You would definitely get my vote for that one as well. If you could follow someone around for a day, who would it be and why?
Oh, it probably, so there's a number of people in different fields, but I would say, you know, really Barack Obama. Sure. I'm just really impressed with what it took for him to do what he had to do and just really spend time to see and get to know him on an intimate level, not just the person that we read about and see in interviews.
Absolutely, that's a good one. Doc, what's been the one thing you have never been afraid to do?
Try. I never believed that I wasn't going to be successful with anything I tried. Even I understood odds and probability and statistics, but I just always felt hope and I always felt if I try, I have an opportunity to succeed.
That's right. What moment from your childhood are you most proud of?
From my childhood? I would think it has to do with, my mother. When I received the award that I received in my elementary school for a top student, these were things that I just expected to do. And certainly I knew she had expectations of me. But when I saw the pride in her, and I just knew that, there's no greater feeling I feel when you make your parent happy and really proud, you know, that just comes back to you tenfold in terms of how you feel.
That's right. Doc, what does success look like for you?
I think success is really having a sense of, and it's different for different people, but having a sense of what's important to you, what your priorities are, what your goals are, and then knowing that you're making your best effort to achieve them. Sure. And I think success is a journey. I used to think it was a destination. At a certain age, you're going to achieve this. But then you realize when you do that, then you should set new goals. And so that's one of the goalposts that should always keep moving is your success. So you keep challenging yourself and keep growing and striving forward. So just knowing that you're doing your best and you're achieving those milestones, but you're doing it with, I was very introverted as a child. And a lot of, as I said, you know, even my corporate career, I started out with me. Now it's, how are we winning? How my success, how am I making others around me better? And certainly those in my life, my family, you know, how am I making, how is it flowing over and shining on them, not just me?
Absolutely good. Doc, what's the biggest lesson you've learned in life?
I think the biggest lesson that I've learned is that that the world is not fair, but you still got to compete in it.
Yes.
So I've told mentored kids who, you know, played basketball, and one of them I went to see, and he was very good, you know, back when he was in high school, and he was complaining the week before about they don't give him this assignment, or they don't give him this opportunity, or they don't give him that, and he's just thinking about just not participating in this program anymore. Then I saw him play basketball and I saw people foul him. I saw people, travel, with him to go to the hoop. And he dug in and got more resilient. So I said to him afterwards, I said, we were talking about life not being fair last week. I said, but that basketball game wasn't fair. There are people who don't play by the rules. There are refs who miss calls. There are people who take two or three steps, on their dribble.
Yeah.
But you didn't quit. You didn't take your ball and go home. I said, why not? He says, because, I know I can still win. I can still beat them. Well, that's right. The same attitude you have to have in life, that even though it's not fair, even though things may not be happening that I don't like or agree with, I still believe I can win. I still believe I can compete to the best of my ability and I can win.
That's right. I love that. Great, great answer. And Doc, last but not least, how do you want to be remembered in history?
You know, I think, you know, as someone who loved his family, who came from a community that doesn't really get the recognition and the respect of the people who live there. You know, maybe you talk about it as statistics, but there are individuals in there who have lives, and their lives can be really something special if we acknowledge them and we recognize that, you know, with some investment, some support, some encouragement, that they can fly. You know, they can be great contributors to this world. So someone who came from an environment like that and hopefully was a good ambassador for my community that I came from.
Yes. Dr. Lawrence Thompson, you survived. Give yourself a round of applause, man. Great job. Great job. Hey, Doc, as we wrap it up, one final thing. Our podcast centers around two things, purpose and resiliency. What last words can you leave our audience with around purpose and resiliency?
Well, you know, I think, you know, you have to have a sense of clarity, because it's hard to have a purpose when you don't really know where you're going, or you're all over the place, or you're trying to do too many things. So I think you have to have a focus. And not that a number of things might not be important, but you have to prioritize them. Yeah. And then you have to focus on those that are the highest priority, and then let that be your purpose. So you apply your maximum amount of energy to allow yourself the best opportunity to succeed. Yeah. And I think as far as resiliency, you have to believe and commit yourself that I'm in this for the long haul. I may not get an easy victory. I may not get everything I want in the first month or the first year at whatever this goal is that I'm pursuing, but I'm going to stick with it. And I'm going to, when the highs are there, I'm going to enjoy the highs. So I think sometimes we defer our gratification. Yeah. And other people maybe take gratification too much in the early part. But I think you have to have a balance where you recognize and you celebrate your wins, but you realize there's still more work to be done. And then when you encounter those lows, and we're all going to have challenges, and we're going to hit pitfalls and road bumps in the road, and you know that this is not the end. I'm not going to go home. I'm not going to take my ball and quit. I'm going to be able to weather this, because I've seen what success looks like. I've seen the euphoria that comes from being achieving, and I want that again. And that's what I'm going to strive through as I go through this down period. So just having that resiliency to believe and let your track record be your confidence builder, and let you know that you've got a track record of having succeeded and won. So don't let this next challenge be the one that you think you can't overcome, because you've got to hit, when you look back into your life, you've got a history of overcoming many, many obstacles throughout your whole life.
Absolutely. Well, that is great advice. Folks, I hope you guys have been inspired by Dr. Lance Thompson's story out there. If you're someone out there, you're an overcomer, you have an amazing story, we want to hear from you, please go to tawatson.com, share your story with us, subscribe to our podcast, Resilient Stories, download this episode, rate it, share with your folks on social media. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Everyone else out there, God bless, peace and deuces.